Orgullosamente Latino hasta la muerte y después. Worldwide Latino Pride, the ambassadors of violence. LAX, K-Dog, the notorious 187 Homicide.
We be
stopping.
Bang, da, bang, da, bang, bang.
Don't say nothing.
Bang, da, bang, da, bang, bang.
We be thumping.
Bang, da, bang, da, bang, bang.
Just act like you know, and homie, stop.
Welcome to Stompin'. I'm from Miami, not Compton. Down with the S's and the 6-4 hopping. To my Boricuas in the 787. And those up in Brooklyn pulling 211.
I come through stomping, rolling in my low top chucks. Making sure you suckers feel me every time we buzz. Shackled up like a nut, going 5150. G'd up in the feet up, greased up in some dickies.
I rap a lot, like the label out of Houston. Sneaky like the clock up in the shop, straight boosting. To all my gente down in Juarez. Calma de un momento, paisa, no dispares.
Put it down from Killer Kelly to the MIA. Ask the homie Crazy K, yo man, that boy don't play. It's in my NIAK, putting it down all day. Representing Southern Cali, get in my way, you'll get sprayed.
We be thumping.
Bang, da, bang, da, bang, bang.
Don't say nothing.
Bang, da, bang, da, bang, bang.
We be thumping.
Bang, da, bang, da, bang, bang.
Well, it is our anniversary show.
Right.
And I think I should be given credit for carrying the show for as long as I have.
Right.
So you can thank me.
I'm not going to thank you for that. I'll thank you for being, a good co-host. That's about it.
You don't think I carried the show?
1,000% you don't.
Do you think that if you got rid of me,
right,
okay, that there would be...
Oh, well, I'm not trying to get rid of you.
Let me ask you this.
Yeah.
Just based on the people that listen to the show on a regular basis, that if you got rid of me, do you think there would be an outcry or celebration?
I think there would be a little bit of each.
Yeah, I think there would be a little bit of each, but I wouldn't want to do it without you. So that's basically it.
Okay.
Yeah. Because the thing is, I think the chemistry that we always had back in the locker room, which is mm-hmm. a real chemistry we had with Jericho too, and Raven, and a couple other guys, Madden, which you hear it even when we talk right now. I hardly ever talk to Madden. You know, it's always great talking to him. You know, it's really good to be able to recreate this here. You know what I'm saying? Because you're just like me. We think the same thing. Let's be controversial. Let's think out of the box. Let's troll a little bit. Let's bust balls. Let's be informative. So it's like we like the same shit, sports, movies. You know what I'm saying? So it's just been always really cool to do this with you.
Did you know that this idiot Hughie just sent me a message on Skype?
No.
You know what
no.
it says? Do you no. want to read this message?
Sure.
Go ahead.
The other question that will change podcasting forever. I think he wants to ask.
He's trying to get you again.
Oh, hey, no.
If you fall for that again, you're worse than Lucy and Charlie Brown with the football every year.
Unbelievable.
Do you remember that?
Yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
Of course. Okay. There's no way I'm going to fall for that again. All right. Let's go to the mailbag because we got and I went through and looked at the mailbag questions this week because we've been getting a lot, and I want to see which ones didn't make the cut. But none of them are really long enough to cut, and none of them are really bad. So we're just going to we're going to go through all of them here. All right. The first one's from CJ Emanuel, and the subject is the hypothetical star rating overhaul. What's up, K100 crew? This is by far my favorite show weekly, and I'm proud to be a monkey on a cupcake. Well, thank you
very much.
DJ Emanuel, shout out. What if Dave Meltzer, Wade Keller, and others of that ilk, tremendous word for a black dude, announced that they would like to standardize how all wrestling matches should be rated? What category should each match be subject to evaluation, psychology, technical, etc., in your respective opinions? Here would be the three things, okay? Technical skill, meaning like there's no holes in the work, everything looked as real as possible. Psychology, meaning it told a logical story that it answered all the questions, like why would you do this, why would you do this, why would you do this? And crowd response, it would be I think would be the most important one, because it would have to be a tremendous crowd response for it to get a match, like, you know, high-rated matches should be, you know, look, there's no way, like, a professional wrestler, like, if you told him in the back, okay, I'm going to pay you $1,000 to go wrestle tonight, all right? That we're going to say, hey, I'm going to let you wrestle next week, too, for $1,000. But no, that's a bad example. Let me change this example. If I gave you $1,000, yeah, I lost my train of thought. If I gave you $1,000, right, would you want to go have a match that required a lot of difficulty, okay, that got less of a crowd response than a match that required less difficulty? What would you rather do if you had a three-star match that got a great crowd response, or would you rather have a five-star match that didn't get as good of a crowd response as a three-star match? And I think most professional wrestlers should want to do the three-star match with a better crowd response. Would you agree with that, or do you think that the answer?
I didn't really understand that question, but I have a better question for you. Would you strip for $10,000 at a male strip club?
Yes.
For $10,000? Yeah. Why not?
Light touching.
What do you mean by that?
Light touching. Light touching. That's just, you know.
Do you mean the female? Am I dancing for males or females?
You're dancing for males. Okay.
No, what about can they rub your shoulders?
What does that have to do with the guy's hypothetical question?
I think that's a better question because I didn't understand yours. Let me just say this.
All right. Here's what I'm saying.
This is what I – okay, go ahead. What do you say? Make it kind of short. I'm a little bit
– however you rate matches and everything, crowd response is the most important one.
Yeah.
Because there's no way a three-star match should get a better crowd response than a five-star match.
Well, what about –
the five-star match didn't do the job right then.
What about build too? Can you have a cold match that could be a five-star match? Like, for instance, tonight...
That's what I'm saying. These indie matches, you can't have five-star indie matches when there's no build-up, no angles. The matches is the culmination of a storyline.
Right.
You know, it's a progression of a storyline. So there has to be a good story leading up to the match. So you can tell the story that led up to the match and tell it in the match. You know?
Like, I think there's a...
No, you could tell. You could have a five-star match or no storyline as long as it's a great athletic match and people are popping. So. But, okay. So, but let me go back to Joe because he kind of seemed into this question a little bit. Would you strip for $10,000 in front of an all-male audience?
I would do filthy, unimaginable things for $10,000.
So you would have no problem light touching either, right?
I'll go with the shoulder rub. You know what? Above the waist, but not below the
Everything
waist.
Above the waist.
Above the waist is fair game.
All right. So, okay. So none of the Chinese tension ball gimmick on the nutsack, none of that.
No, we're going to have to – we go up to
– 10 grand. 50. Okay, that's cool. So if somebody bit your nipple, you'd have no problem with that.
That's got to be a light bite. It's got to be a light bite.
All right. So this is what I think, Disco. I kind of look at a match almost like I look at a movie. Did I like the movie or did I like the match? Once you get into one-fourths and halves and three-fourths, that's too nuanced for me. This ain't a wine tasting contest. So I look at it like a movie. Was it good? Did I enjoy it? Did I pop? Would I see it again? That's how kind of I look at it. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Yeah.
The next one's from Brad Baska, and the subject is Brian Alvarez. This is not really a question, but I have been jonesing hardcore for Conan to paint the beautiful verbal picture of his childhood Florida carnival experience. The guy operating the ride talking his shit while Jungle Love provides such wonderful ambience in the background. I searched for Conan's Alvarez voice carnival segment on YouTube and can't find it. It's legit one of the funniest things I've ever heard in my entire life. Thanks a lot. Looking forward to your show every week. Great job. I don't even know what this guy's talking about.
We used that as a cold open a while ago. I did find it off one of the old MLW radio shows. I don't have the file anymore, but I'll look for it. You know, I know exactly what he's talking about. It was an old MLW radio bit they used to do.
Next one's from Bill. And the subject is congrats to 3 years. Congrats to 3 years of keeping 100. I've listened to every episode. I enjoyed the episode you tricked Hoovy to Kevin Gilbert being salty because he got called out by that wrestler. Then he took his ball and went home. I appreciate the shout out on episode 23. D.I. was right. Vince Russo's singing should always be on the list. Now I know why dogs howl when something is awful. My question is, what has been your favorite moments and what can we expect in this coming year of keeping 100? I have not had any favorite moments on the show. It's been misery having to carry these guys. I'm expecting more of the same next year because Conan is in Iran half the show and Joe is trying to line up guests for the Creative Control Network while he's recording this. So it's like, I just think in the future, it's going to be much of the same.
So you're going to tell me you didn't pop at a Juventud misspelling his email?
Was that was the first year, though.
Yeah. Well, this is our third year anniversary.
All right. So that was funny.
I think
it was funny when we called out Gil for trying to get people to buy him a plane ticket to Japan.
That was great.
The first ambush, the first time that we had Simon Diamond ambushed by Frankie Kazarian was pretty great.
Right.
And that's more recent.
How about when Hoovy thought Dio Moore was Russo? You remember that?
Oh, yeah. Right. That's when we tricked Hoovy, that one.
How about when he wouldn't let Senor Benjamin talk? And he thought he was Puerto Rican.
That he was from,
yeah. He was Mexican. I liked the disembowelment of KG by Lord Cyrus, Lance Storm, Russo, yourself, me, Dave Chris, who finally put the final nail in the coffin. Let me see. What else? The train wreck was great.
Yes.
Remember that?
Yeah.
I thought our boy Vinny Paz has always been cool. Ryan Satin coming on here and losing it with you.
Colby right. Covington. Colby Covington's had some great interviews and great moments on here.
Who else?
I thought the first time when we had that show, when we interviewed all four of those UFC guys is pretty good.
That's great.
That's the first where we interviewed Tony Ferguson.
And Diego else? Sanchez was such a wrestler.
Yeah.
And how about when Bader got emotional on the show?
Yeah.
How about when Sabu came out hot and left?
Yeah, he got pissed because we were talking about Paul. Made him so mad he got just hang up.
We got to get him back. A lot of people have been waiting for that part too. That didn't happen.
So. As hot as you can come in on a show.
Right.
Yeah. And the WCW live reunion I thought was pretty great.
That was too.
All of these were my ideas, by the way. Okay, the next one. Joe, do we have a commercial this week?
No.
We're gonna plug here. Because this one's from Adam R. And the subject is Tiege product works like magic. Hey Disco, after your Raven review, I decided to try the Tiege products for my face. In the K100 show's Tiege advertisement, you said you were using the product, went out in the sun, and one week later, one of the girls at Sapphires asked, "Wow, were you out in the sun? It's like magic. I got the same effect after wearing it out in the sun. Thanks, wow. Thanks for your review. Stick to your read, you schmuck. Thanks for keeping it 100. So, the products that we endorse products that we use and that work, and Tiege skincare. Joe, do you have the link that our users can do to get this product because they get a discount?
Yeah, it's Tiege.com/Konan, KONAN, and then use the promo code Konan, KONAN, and you get 20% off any of the skincare systems. And yeah,
let me tell you something.
There's a random guy writing in to tell us that the product works.
Well, he's the second guy. That's the second he's one,
second,
yeah.
Second guy, right, yeah. Right.
But let me just say one thing real quick about the Tiege thing. So I've been trying it, and I'll tell you exactly what I like about it now because of first time I hadn't tried it. I like the eye thing that just keeps my eyes cool and fresh because they're always tired. And also like that moisturizer that you put on after the face scrub because it just wakes up your face. You know what I'm saying? And it smells fresh. The shit's dope. So I've been using it and I've been enjoying it.
All right, the next one is
Real quick. So take this and tell Tiege we just gave him an extra commercial so they can put it on.
Yeah.
I'm gonna go outside the box here. This isn't an email,
right.
But this is I'll read the email first.
Right. Okay?
And it's from Adam Hughes, who's Hughie hello. Right. Subject is Guns N' Roses versus Metallica. Hey guys, seeing as the Juicy Seal doesn't happen as often anymore, I want to ask a music question. Who's better between Guns N' Roses and Metallica? Bear in mind, Joe loves Guns N' Roses and hates Metallica. So it will annoy him if you agree with me and say Metallica are better. P.S. Pat Caney isn't Irish, so that has heat with me. P.P.S. Conan, do my podcast.
Ooh.
Who? Who is this?
Hughie.
No. That's bro. You can. I'm not Disco. He'll go on and be a nice guy. I'm a dick. Okay, so... But Metallica and Guns N' Roses, what, you don't like Metallica, Joe?
I do, but I cut off with them sometime in the 90s. Like, after they did, you know, Enter Sandman and all that stuff that everybody knows, I'm fine with. All the stuff after that, not so much.
Well, everybody knows. Who's everybody? I don't know. So, what, do they have heat with you over the Montreal screwjob? See what I did there? Do they have heat with you over the Montreal incident?
No. Yeah, I don't like.
I also can see this. I think you once showed me a picture of you dressed up as Axl Rose. Am I correct?
Yes, I did do that for
so
Halloween.
So I can imagine this guy back in the 90s when he was scrawnier with long hair, wearing the fucking Axl Rose thing, probably looking a lot like him at a concert. Someone going, "Yo, you look like Axl Rose, dude. Let's rock." And you're like, "Yeah, let's sword fight." So I'm pretty sure that that might have something to do with it, that you impersonated Axl at his concerts.
Well, I could always
truth to that.
I could always redo the Halloween costume this year because now he's kind of pudgy. And I'm a little pudgy.
And you're very
know?
Pudgy.
So
yeah,
there we
okay.
go. But Guns N' Roses, of course.
And I also want to say another thing. I think if we look at record sales, I think Metallica probably outsold Guns N' Roses, but I think they were both two greatest groups ever. How could you like one over the other? But go ahead.
Wait, what did you say? They're the two greatest groups ever.
Two of the greatest groups ever.
I'm going to be contrarian here.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm a fan of Guns N' Roses. I'm a fan of Metallica. I like Metallica better. Okay. But I think both of these bands have a red mark on their careers, and that I'm not a fan of. That I don't think they can be considered in the conversation because to both of these bands, some of their better songs are cover songs.
Right.
It bothers me. Like if you're going to talk about the best bands of all time, you can't be Metallica's version of Turn the Page is like one of your top 10 songs. You know, that's not that doesn't work for me.
Why not if you like the song and it's good?
Because it's not because somebody else sings a song.
I don't think Metallica fans
me personally. I'm not a fan of the covers.
Yeah.
I'm not a fan of bands that cover other bands. I just think it's kind of like, you know,
I think it's
kind of lame, to be honest. It is kind of lame.
Did you invent the Chartbuster?
Yes.
You invented that?
Yes, I did.
It was Johnny Ace.
He just said Johnny Ace.
Pretty sure.
Wow.
The Ace Crusher.
He doubled down on that. Okay, so there you go.
So that answers the question. That's all the mailbag today.
All right. Enjoy the rest of the show. Boom.
And fuck you, Joe Troller.
Wow.
Yo, this is your boy, Mike Holder, a.k.a. the Evil Ring Announcer. Happy third anniversary to the guys on Keeping It 100. Conan, one of the best of all time. JoJo, the Philly entrepreneur, and even Bugle Beat himself, the Disco Inferno. Great job, guys. 3 years strong. Keep it going. Keep it up with the quality content. And I've been listening to this for almost 2 years, and it gets better and better every week. Anyway, thanks, guys, for all the great content. Much love. Peace.
Hey guys, it's best friend of the show from the 419, Jed Frankforther. I just wanted to congratulate Conan, Disco, and the best podcast producer out there, JoJo Feeney, on a tremendous 3 years of Keeping It 100, and I look forward to many more episodes. Oh, and fuck that cocksucker KG.
Hello, Keeping It 100 crew. I just want to say thank you and congratulations for 3 years. It's been an awesome ride, and I've been a day one listener. My favorite memory is Hoovy trying to spell out his Twitter handle. Where the hell is Hoovy, by the way? Bring back the juice. And when you can't think of anything else to say because you've been in Iran all day, just cut it short. Thanks, guys.
Hi, this is Josh from Baltimore. I'd like to wish Keeping It 100 a happy third anniversary. Conan, you're the man. Thank you for the advice you've given me. Disco, you are the greatest heel in the business today. Sorry about Philadelphia. And JoJo, thank you for doing all that you do for the show and the listeners.
All right, lads. It's me, your pal. Who else but the great Graham Boston. King of the mailbag, sheriff of the K100 universe, the shock caller, the brawler. You already know the rest. Charles, Glenn, Joseph, my friends, happy anniversary. It has been 3 great years. The laughs, the banter, the burials, good times. Joseph asked me for some of my favorite moments on the show. Obviously, it is whenever I'm in the mailbag, but not the mailbag, when I'm in the mailbag. Fuck everybody else's emails. So lads, here's to your continued success. Keeping It 100. Boom. P.S. Russian vids, go suck a big, fat, hot bowl of dicks, mother.
Well, you know what? Go ahead.
So guess what, boys?
Yo.
Public service announcement here. K100 with Conan and Disco is brought to you by Get Blitzed. Get Blitz was created by Mickey Ray Sinatra from Mo Thug South, plus Courtney, the brains of the operation. The big product here, the number one seller, is their nano-infused THC syrup. You know a lot of our listeners here like the THC, and this is a real deal THC. Not the garbage they sell in the gas stations. The stuff in the gas stations is garbage.
Yeah.
And it's super potent, like THC on steroids. It's a 5 to 15 minute onset with as little as a teaspoon. It's perfect for the weekend, for relaxing, for a party. And there's no hangover. You know what it's perfect for? Halftime of the football game. So you can take the teaspoon by itself, mix with water, soda, juice, and energy drink, whatever you want. The mix with the energy drink is fantastic, by the way. Flavors like cherry and grape are both delicious either way. Go to getblitzed.com and use the code K100 to get 15% off. That's GET-blitzed, BLITZED.com. I've been using this product. Great for watching football, gotta admit. Great for watching hockey. Great for watching TV. Great for watching the soccer games in the morning. Great for after the gym if you want to wind down. So if you're looking to up your game and avoid low-quality imitations with shady ingredients, check out Get Blitz now at GET-BLITZED.com and use our code K100, that's K100, to get 15% off. That ain't cheap. Order, enjoy, let us know on Twitter or K100Questions@gmail.com about your experience. That's 50% off with the code K100 at GetBlitz.com. Great product. I love the t-shirts, too.
Yeah, I love the t-shirt, too. The Kool-Aid guy.
Yeah, that's excellent. Well, it's funny because, you know, when he first wanted us to bring Get Blitzed aboard, you know, he sent us all a sample. And I got cherry. And actually, I used it. I used the whole bottle, you know, just video games or even, you know, watching a movie like Disco said. And now I'm a paid customer. That's how much, you know, I enjoyed the experience. So, yeah, it's real chill. Like Disco said, halftime of a football game, or if you're just chilling watching a movie with your girl or with friends or whatever, it's a good time, and there is no hangover, just like we mentioned in the copy. You know, you're not going to feel like you drank the night before, or you're not going to feel woozy because you smoked too much or something. You wake up fresh as a daisy.
Well, this is what I like about it. Everything from listening to music, watching TV, football games, sports, movies, everything. It enhances everything that I'm doing. And my 10 favorite flavors are pina colada and grape. So get a glitz, get high without, you know, feeling shaky, without getting that garbage that you get at the stores or at the gas stations. This is a real deal. We all use it. We all love it. And as we said before, we're not going to endorse anything that doesn't work. So get blitz at getblitz.com. Boom.
And now it's time for the Keeping It 100 with Conan third year anniversary party. And I lined up three pretty special mystery guests for this occasion.
Who is this?
Yeah, what's up? It's Mark.
Mark Madden.
Mark Madden, yes.
Oh, Jesus.
What's up, Mark?
What's going on, Conan? How you doing?
Good. Are you in Pittsburgh? Is that where you live?
No, fabulous Las Vegas. I'm in disco territory, but I've done well to avoid them so far.
Okay, let me tell you this running theme that Disco seems to be telling everybody. He says, just so you know, that every time you go to Vegas, he always makes sure you pick up the tab. Please reverse the charges on that this week.
Well, that's absolutely true. He does make sure I pick up the tab. What can I do? I feel bad for the guy. I mean, he barely has a job. He basically mops the floor at a peep show. It's kind of embarrassing. So if I can buy him a hamburger or something like that, I feel like I owe it to society almost.
Have you ever visited him? Now Jericho has seen him. I don't know where the exact location is at the soup kitchen that he works at.
I don't know if he works. He eats there. It's a fine line.
Probably both.
Could be both.
How you doing?
Good, hanging in there. Just got here yesterday. I'm doing a couple shows out here because I sometimes do my show from here. I'm going to see Aerosmith a couple times, so that should be pretty good.
Yeah, he says that you like to go there just to watch, like, rock acts, right?
Yeah, because a lot of them now do residencies here, you know? Like, they do, like, you know, a couple weeks, maybe a show every other night. Like, Aerosmith's at MGM Park. Rod Stewart's been at Caesar's Palace for a long time. Def Leppard and Journey are doing this summer. So it's, if you don't get to see those groups very often, because sometimes they come to Pittsburgh and sometimes they don't, you come out here, you can see them twice or three times in a week.
Mark, give me your point of view on this, that, you know, we're all big classic rock fans. I'm a big classic rock fan. Why is it that we do not see great rock bands anymore?
Well, I don't know if we don't. I just think they're kind of lost in the shuffle because there's not really a record industry anymore. People don't buy records. They download. They watch on YouTube and stuff like that. And because of that, we can never get an exact count of exactly how popular anything today is. You know, platinum and gold records anymore. I mean, technically there's, but it's not a measuring stick. There's a really good group of a bunch of kids, real young for me, like 20 years old through 22 or 23, named Greta Van Fleet, and they sound like Led Zeppelin.
Yeah.
And our, you know, way of thinking, we have to use that to tear them down instead of saying, boy, it's about time somebody sounds like Led Zeppelin. but they're really, really good. There's kind of a tongue-in-cheek satanic priest act called Ghost that's really good. So,
but I don't think when you were young you gave a fuck about record sales. You just liked the music.
Well, no, but you heard of groups because of that. That got like the machinery going, the PR, all the magazines and stuff like that.
Right.
I consider Madden to be pretty much a rock expert. He used to maybe we could get into stories maybe even tonight.
Right.
Is that where he used to interview rock bands when he was at a young age? That did like interviews for press. But there is the stain on his record when you're referring to this, because his favorite band of all time is UFO. I can't UFO exactly.
Ooh.
I can't find one other person I've ever met in my life that has UFO ranked in like their top 25. So this is a very bizarre position. Could you explain?
Were you on the UFO when you heard this music, Mark? Who is this?
UFO is awesome, and they're doing their last tour. The Stinger Seven is doing their last tour this October, and I can name another. I can name a person who considers UFO his favorite group. The famous disc jockey Eddie Trunk ranks UFO number one.
Wow. I know Eddie.
Eddie Trunk is. He had that show, that metal show.
Right.
He's a big name.
He's a big.
Okay,
big
guy who mops the floors at a peep show, talking about how big other names are and aren't.
Okay, so I'm looking at this group UFO. All right, and they're from London, right?
Oh yeah, I mean they've had a million members. Now they have two guys from America, but they still have. They still have three guys from the Glory Days. That's about right.
Madden, this is the funniest thing. Now, the thing about this band, from hearing these stories from Madden over the years,
right,
is that would tumultuous be a good way to describe their career arc?
Like the guitar player, the ex-guitar player punched the singer on stage.
Right.
The singer fell off stage once when he was doing too many pills. They've had their share of comings and goings and unpleasant incidents. But
Mark, that sounds like your run-of-the-mill rock group. I mean, what are you talking about? I mean, we could go down.
It sounds like what goes on in wrestling backstage, too, so why are we making fun of it?
Let me ask. No.
I'll tell you one thing about UFO. UFO never did a job for a woman.
Let me ask you a question, Mark. So when you were interviewing these rock stars and all that, and I want to get back to that in a minute, but when you were interviewing them, and then obviously you got into the wrestling business, did you see a lot of parallels? You know, over the top characters, the crazy partying.
It's hard to tell if there's more or less in music or wrestling, but I see the comparison. But like anything, you had some guys who did, some guys who didn't. One of the biggest contrasting episodes I can mention is I interviewed Motley Crue way back when they were just starting to become big. This is like 1984, right, and they were opening up for Ozzy Osbourne on tour. And they invited me backstage to say hello. I went backstage. I saw Nikki Sixx and Tommy Lee double-teaming a girl on the bathroom floor.
Right.
While I was urinating, they said, "Oh, go ahead, take a piss. She's just some pig,"
right,
which I thought was very magnanimous of them. The amount of drugs they did was just incredible. And then the next week, Dio was in town, Ronnie James Dio, and I went backstage there, and we sat down and had tea.
Right. That's tremendous. So who would you say is the star that you wanted to meet the most, and you finally met him, and it was like a big mark out moment for you?
Oh, like all the UFO guys, even though Glenn will make fun of that. I don't know. I mean, I never got to meet the guys from Led Zeppelin. Those would have been the guys I got down and genuflected in front of. I'll tell you who I interviewed recently. This is kind of going back to sports from music. I had Joe Namath on my show recently, the Jets quarterback who won Super Bowl III and changed football forever. He's from the Pittsburgh area. And I had him on before, but it was the first time in a long time.
Yeah. Go ahead.
It's the first time I talked to him in a long time, and boy, just to speak with a guy who's so iconic in his sports and really who did more to make football the biggest sport in this country than anybody else, because, you know, when he won Super Bowl III with the Jets, that big upset over Baltimore, it was right at the time of the merger between the AFL and NFL and really put football over the top in America. So that was a pretty big markout moment for me, sure. Some of the rock guys went like...
Not only that, he had a lot of white boy swag. He wasn't afraid to sit, you know, in a
no question.
Yeah, in a fur.
Let me ask you this, to segue into wrestling, and to segue that from the point where you were just talking about, to segue into professional wrestling. Does AEW have a Joe Namath that they can as they're like making their, like they're the new kid on the block, kind of like the AFL was? Do you see any? Are there any comparisons that can be made between the AFL, becoming impactful to AEW now, like starting on TV?
Well, don't forget though, when the AFL started out, they didn't have a Joe Namath either,
right?
So if you're asking me, do they have a big star right now who could put them over the top? So Jericho's kind of that guy right now. Maybe Kenny Omega is, maybe he isn't. I think to assume he's going to be a big star in America just because he was a big star in Japan is pretty much a leap of faith, although certainly he's got the quality to do it. You just never know how American wrestling fans respond. Then again, they already have the internet cult following assembled. So, you know, that's one point in their favor and his favor. But in terms of young guys, I don't know. I mean, to that level, I don't know. I mean, to be perfectly honest, and I'm rooting for AEW, but boy, it's going to be tough, isn't it? I mean, let me ask you guys. Do you think in 5 years AEW will still be a product on national American cable TV with a weekly show, and will it still have the buzz it does right now before it's barely started? I tough to guarantee that, isn't it?
I'm going to give you an analogy that I came up with last night that I was thinking of. Again, I want to see what you guys think of this. Okay, is that the relationship between the WWE and their fan base? Okay, has drastically deteriorated. The fans are blaming the booking of the show on the reason that they're not providing them good content, and the company is kind of like, in a way, kind of like blaming the fans for the way they react to the product. And what I see right now is a broken relationship between the WWE and its fans that is just basically ending in divorce. And what I see these fans now, the divorced wife of the WWE, the relationship is broken down. There's this new hot-looking guy on the block all of a sudden that people are talking about. You know, and that would be AEW. And I'm just wondering if the fans of wrestling today are ready to basically just dump the WWE because it's been so bad for this new product.
Well, I think you've overcomplicated things drastically, but that's to be forgiven because you're not really that bright. Most people have stopped watching wrestling.
Mark, let me just so you know, here's another thing. This guy puts the veracity of your IQ on the line every single week. He says that you claim to have like a 160, whatever it is, and he thinks it's in the low 90s.
Low teens. The low 116, I think.
No, that's just not true. My IQ is evident as that thing on his face that looks like an Eiffel Tower that he calls a nose.
So go ahead. I'm sorry.
I mean, but to get back to my original point, there are a lot more people who used to watch wrestling than watch wrestling right now. You know, Disco's talking about the wrestling fans lapsing. They've already lapsed. I mean, on Monday night, there used to be 8,000 or 9,000 people that watched wrestling. Now there's, what, 2 or 3 tops. So I think the scenario you've described has already played out. And I don't know how WWE gets those fans back. I'm not even sure how AEW gets them. I'm not sure that they know AEW exists. I kind of laugh when, you know, a lot of the dirt sheet guys, like Dave Meltzer, talk about this being a golden era in wrestling. Now, if you want to do 4-star, 5-star, all that jerk-off stuff, maybe it is that. But fewer people watch wrestling now than ever before. So how could it be a golden age? It's weird how, and to be honest, laughable, that the internet and the echo chamber has made this about who can have the best match in the ring as opposed to who can draw the most money. The only scoreboard that matters is drawing money. Now, WWE's done admirably in getting the most money possible out of the few fans that are left, but that doesn't change the fact that there are few fans left, and it doesn't change the fact that that's a pretty ominous situation to look at in the long run.
So here's the way I look at it. I think, you know, the fans are correct in all the backlash they've given WWE because never respect them. They've given them whatever they've wanted, irregardless of what the fans wanted. And now that they're trying to give it to them, it may be too late. The thing with AEW is they've got this great, which we had, a great platform, which is Turner. And I don't see too many rock groups or wrestling groups or any acts out there selling out in 15 minutes or 10 minutes like they are. So they obviously have a very dedicated fan base. Now, they did lose a lot of fans 20 years ago. That's 20 years ago. They may be starting to bring new fans that weren't, you know, new fans to the fold. So we're just going to have to see how that unfolds.
Oh, no question. And I'm rooting for them. Make no mistake. Yeah. And the fact that they can sell out the shows that quickly is a phenomenon. That's that they haven't had many of them yet. Right. One thing that I like about the AEW stuff we've seen, they're clearly doing unscripted promos. They're clearly doing bullet points and improvisation.
Which I love.
And it's so much better. It's so refreshing. All the WWE interviews sound like they're being spoken by the same voice. WWE is just such a toxic situation. I tweeted something earlier about the announcers, how I'd hate to be an announcer in WWE because you've got this madman who's lapsing into dementia screaming in your ear every second saying, say this, say that, say the other thing. I heard him enough. He wasn't very good when he did it, so get out there and do it yourself, old man. And you got crap like you know, you have to call Drew McIntyre the Scottish psychopath 15 times during his segment so everybody remembers to buy a friggin' T-shirt. It's samey, it's cliched, it's repetitive, it's just awful. But I can't even blame the announcers because they're just doing as they're told. You can trace everything bad about WWE, everything, directly to Vince McMahon because despite the fact that he's at an age where he should be anything but hands-on, he's more hands-on than ever.
Well, you know what, boys? It's the new year, and you know you should be back in the swing of things with your health and fitness routine. Hopefully that means you're using world-class nutritional supplements from Legacy Sports Nutrition. Whether it's bestsellers like TestX9 Testosterone Booster, Recovery PM Sleep Optimizer, and the delicious salted caramel whey protein, you can be sure you're using elite-level products. Now, this show, K100, is the most used discount code ever at LegacySubs.com, and we can't thank you enough for the loyalty to both Legacy and this show. Using that code supports our show and Legacy, which, as you know, is brought to you by Nick On Probation Aldis and Mickey James. Legacy wants to reward you, our K100 family. So every customer that uses code K100, that's K100, at LegacySubs.com through the end of February, will receive a free water-resistant Bluetooth speaker while stocks last. That's awesome. So level up your performance, well-being, and mind with LegacySubs.com, and don't forget to use the code K100 at checkout, and we're giving you a Bluetooth speaker for being a loyal members of LegacySubs.com.
Free speaker, huh? Ooh.
What do you use, Joe?
Yeah, I definitely use the Recovery PM every night. I sleep way deeper. You wind up having these vivid type dreams. You're out like a light and you wake up and there's no fogginess or like if you use like some other sleep aid, sometimes you wake up foggy, but not with Recovery PM.
I've been using the desiccated liver pills.
And, cool.
They've been great. I feel great.
They're the reason we've been with them for 2 years.
Maybe three even at this point.
3 years. The fact that we have the most what?
With the most buys with our referral code, we beat everybody else. Yeah.
All right. So this works. They have a whole array of supplements. Go check it out. You know, get your supplements at Legacy Subs. Boom.
What's up, man?
Killer Cross.
Yo, what's up?
Oh, Killer Cross is here.
Yeah.
Killer Cross.
Yes.
Okay, what happened last night at the Future Stars of Wrestling 10th Anniversary Show?
We had a standing room only. The whole place was packed. It was pretty amazing, man. It was a pretty emotional thing to see. I got my break in this business, as you know, at the 5th Anniversary Show, and there was a lot of people there that night, and there's been a lot of people there every year during this time, but last year, I think, was a record, and did the main event with Chris Bey, who's there. World heavyweight champion, and I think it's safe to say that we sent everybody home happy, so mission accomplished.
So last night, FSW, this happened last night, 10th year anniversary, main event, Chris Bey and Killer Cross?
Yes.
Cool. Yeah. Was Disco there?
Disco was not there.
No, first of all, let's discuss this. The night before, I was elected into the Future Stars of Wrestling Hall of Fame, okay?
Right. Oh, wow.
Which is basically the Las Vegas Wrestling Hall of Fame. And I think it's a preamble to what we'll see probably eventually in the future where I do get elected into the WWE Hall of Fame someday when they realize me and appreciate my talents. Would you think that's a possibility, Conan?
1,000% not.
No chance whatsoever.
No chance whatsoever.
Well, there is a popular argument that Disco was the best 205 cruiserweight champion of all time. I mean, there is an argument out there. He was a cruiserweight
neither popular nor an argument. It's a fact that he wasn't.
Let me ask you a question. Do you guys watch 205 Live?
No.
Do you watch it, Kevin?
I do not.
How many of the guys actually weigh 205 or like close to 205? Are any of them like remotely close to 205? They all look like they're 170 pounds.
Well, you know, I mean, I think you'd probably be at the top of the bracket if you did decide to make a return, and hopefully for their sake you don't. I would feel very bad for them if that happened.
Right.
Jeez.
Now, let me ask you guys, just I don't want to get too much into detail, but how did your training go with Kane?
It went very, very well. I haven't said a word to anybody about it, obviously, for obvious reasons. He's picking it up very quickly. I mean, he's legit. He's 100% legit. His entire life, he's been an amateur wrestler, from my understanding. His footwork is there. His ring awareness is there. Everything is there. His footwork is there. Striking, all of his transitions, ground mobility. You know, if he gets into a pro wrestling ring, he 100% will be a draw, and I think his in-ring ability is going to be able to carry the hype.
What did you think, D.I.?
Well, here's the thing. It's like you think like you get a guy that's like a world-class amateur wrestler, and you're expecting he's probably going to be able to know how to do most of the stuff that we're going to make him do. Because when you train a guy like that, you base it around you work around the skills that he's good at. So right. The guy's a good amateur wrestler, right? So of course you can employ wrestling, you know, like bro, like the guy like you know shoot wrestling. Like we didn't even have to like train him to lock up. Like he knew how to lock up.
Right.
He knew how to go behind and take down. He knew how to do a fireman's carry. He knew like you know what I'm saying? So he knew like things that you would do in the first minute or two of a basic wrestling match, he could already just do all those things just right off the bat. You know, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
Because he's you know. So what we did is we worked around those skills, and then you take some other like of course you got to give him a few big bumps to the guy, you know, he's a big guy and stuff, and just gave him some simple ones to do, and he just knew how to do them all immediately. So we just like worked. Here's the thing: whatever you want him to do, I think he'll be able to do it. Like if you look at what he can do and say, okay, hey, you know what, let's try this since you can do this, I would suggest he'd probably be able to do that. Like he could probably work his way. Like the first 2 months of training for somebody, like in professional wrestling, they took somebody off the streets. He'd probably do it 15 minutes. Like he knows how to do all that stuff, you know?
Right.
So.
Yeah, you both spoke very highly of him, and that really impressed me, somebody to come in.
What's the heat he had? He said he had an issue with you. He didn't really like you. He didn't like your attitude.
Basically, that's what he said to me. He had actually written me a text, and I might
remember that where Kane was saying that he felt Conan was disrespecting him, was going to have words with him when he saw him.
Well, verbatim what he said was he said he felt like Conan was looking at him like a guy who had no idea what he's doing, and he had to refrain himself from trying to like physically attack him.
Right.
I mean, I thought that was a little. I mean, I don't know. It didn't strike me like he had anger management issues. I thought he was kind of overreacting, but I don't know what happened.
I don't know, but I got this funny text from him where it just basically says, "Hey man, thanks for hooking me up. What a bunch of idiot and J-Brones at Kevin Cross and Disco. And if I ever see you or them again, I will." And this is how he, in capital letters, fucking ground and pound all three of you into a unrecognizable pulp. Your friend Kane. So he didn't, I don't know. He really didn't have a lot of good things to say about you guys.
I think that was fake news.
It's just a misunderstanding, I'm sure.
Probably.
Yes. So what are you doing right now besides Impact and AAA? Or is that the only thing you're doing? Or is it Impact, AAA, FSW, assorted indies? What do you do?
Well, basically, I was going to put this on the tail end as well. Last night, Austin Aries made his return back to the pro wrestling scene here in the United States. He's been on a short hiatus. He's been working on different things. And I do know he's scheduled for a return with MLW, but he came out last night and got a really good ovation. There was a payoff that a lot of people did not get between Austin and I with Impact. And I think Austin and I are going to plan to pay that off independently. So we launched that last night. And Austin actually brought Frank Mir, who is a former UFC world heavyweight champion. into the ring. So we're going to be building towards me and Frank Mir independently in the immediate future. So that's going to be going down. A gentleman by the name of Joe DeFalco, who's a promoter here in Las Vegas, him and I have come together to create a UWFI Japan / Bloodsport type event where it's pro wrestling, pancrase, and mixed martial arts. It's called Natural Born Killers.
Is there any truth to the rumor that you will be the head trainer at Vampiro's Dojo?
That is not true.
Okay, I'm just asking.
I got a great story, too, for you, by the way. I got a great story for that. Did you hear the story, Cross?
What happened?
That Vamp came to Vegas and had told them that, told those guys at FS, that the schools told Joe and them that he's got all these money backers, like these guys from AAA that want to come in here and take it over. But Joe had to fire all his trainers. Vamp in charge.
Oh my God.
About that. You didn't hear that?
No, I didn't.
Oh, that's great.
He told Joe to fire everyone at the school?
Yeah, then he would take it over.
Holy shit.
How great is that, right?
Oh, wow. Well, yeah, that's insane. Bloodsport July 5th here in Las Vegas, and then I'm working with a company called Maverick Pro out of Los Angeles, and just taking various indie bookings all over the United States. I'm in the process of possibly going overseas by the end of the year for a variety of different things, so I'm staying busy, very, very busy.
Also, too, you promote your YouTube channel because, like, there's a handful of wrestlers today that are very good at producing their own content, producing their own videos and everything. When did you get interested in that? Like when you first started, like, producing your own videos with music and stuff, like editing them. How long have you been doing that?
Well, I've been doing it since the beginning, and I'll tell you why. So I'm from an archaic age where technology is not like a natural thing that comes to me. I hate it. Like, I absolutely hate that it takes me 10 times as long to understand how things work than other people. And basically, when I got involved, I was like, I had no idea the structure of what was supposed to happen in order to get to WWE. So, like, in the very beginning, I was like, I knew about the independents, then I knew about Japan and WWE. That's kind of really all I knew about. So I thought, maybe you just go to a school, you learn what to do, and you go to a tryout and you get hired. I had no comprehension whatsoever of any of this. So when I got to the school and I saw I was just working in a little warehouse of, like, you know, 80 people in attendance, I was like, no wonder the mainstream audience doesn't watch independent wrestling and they think so poorly of it because of the production value. You look at commercialized wrestling and then you look at independent wrestling. What's the biggest noticeable difference from a casual viewer? It's the production value. So I thought to myself, I'm not going to wait for these companies and this, you know, all these people to push me. I'm going to push myself. Like, why am I waiting for that? Like, if I believe in the quality and the value of my character presentation and work, I'm just going to learn how to do this myself. Like, fuck it. I'll create my own channel. So I basically just try to take elements of things that I felt like I could pull off sincerely. And I created this channel. I taught myself how to use everything. So I think it was like 3 to 6 months into my training, I was like, I need to do something and I need to create a separate platform that will plug other people into everything I'm doing. So I've literally tried to chronologically track everything I've done since day one for the last 5 years, and I put it on that YouTube channel, which is completely free. It's literally the Killer Cross channel on YouTube.
Let me ask you a question. Promote, if you've never seen the Killer Cross channel, okay, and somebody's going to check it out for the first time, give me three of your favorite videos they should check out.
I think definitely the John Moxley video would be number one. It's called Time Killer. Okay. The second one would be Thailand, which was sort of a different direction, a different take I was going in with stoicism and nihilism. I was trying to combine two different types of philosophies and tell a short story.
How much time did you spend there when you went there recently?
I went backpacking to Thailand for, I believe, 10 days. Wow. And it was the best experience of my life. Like, a lot of people don't understand the difference between vacations and backpacking. Like, I literally took one bag and went with Scarlett, and we just went there, and we did the entire trip for maybe less than $1,000 because of the dollar conversion. Like, right. The American dollars were
so cheap. Like, give me an example. Like a lunch, like a decent sized lunch. How much it costs over there?
$2.
Yeah, it's crazy, right?
Yeah, it's just $2. That's it. Yeah. I spent time in the temples there.
That was beautiful, bro. That, because I saw that Thailand one, and that was fucking beautiful.
Yeah, it was really, really, really healthy, man. Spiritually, like, it was very, very good for me. And you realize how much of a minimalist the actual person is, like how very little you need to be happy, and you remove all the social bullshit, and the concrete jungle and everything, you really get in touch with yourself.
That's basically what nihilism is, but what is the first one you said, stoicism or what?
Stoicism, which is basically just sort of a general acceptance of how things are and just being honest and coming to grips with that, essentially. It's a middle ground. It's like a zen to not be emotionally imbalanced, to be in total balance and just accept everything as it is, essentially.
Which must be very hard when most of the world and the majority of our industry is everything but that.
Yeah, it's major highs and downs, you know, ups and downs. It's just absolutely nothing but that. Yeah,
plus what Kevin is very good at too is his character portrays his character trait is that he's very good at deflecting the basic media narratives that people have said every day, and finding alternative media to try to find your own truth in things. You know, like I don't know if you follow Kevin on Instagram, but he'll send you stuff like some real outside the box videos, like for Instagram.
No, but we talk about it. We talk about it.
The third video I would definitely say is The Man They Call Cross. And this was a step up from a lot of the other stuff that I put together, because this is my introduction to AAA. And I was under the impression at the time that I could probably film something and they would put it on the television show, you know, to kind of introduce people to me, because my original introduction was with Johnny and Taya when Johnny won all three belts. I had screwed over Fantasma and Tejano. So I thought an appropriate introduction would be necessary. And this was basically me punching through a concrete block, and then training, and then a bunch of quick highlights. And then I had someone here basically cut a promo. It was a woman basically identifying herself that she worked for the Nevada State Athletic Commission. I wasn't granted a license because they thought that my intentions in a competition format were malicious and unhealthy. The whole thing is in Spanish, but they never fucking aired it. So it's out there, but you can watch what I thought would have been cool.
But I think when I first came in, I think I used some of those clips, remember?
Yes, no, you did. You had chopped it up and basically for time format and stuff like that. And we did find ways to use it, but yeah. I'm still happy I did it. A lot of people really enjoyed it. And
I love that. We need to do that again. Give me your synopsis of your time.
I want to give somebody, since we're talking about the videos, I would suggest to anybody the video where you cut the video on what's his name?
Was it Meritato?
Yeah, Mr. Meritato. That video for the House of Hardcore, I'll tell you this, that was a video that got you noticed by people that run companies. Because when we played that on the show, that Don Callis heard it. And had no idea who you were before he heard that video, before he heard that.
I remember that, actually. No, I do. I do remember that. Yeah, when you guys started putting my stuff on Keeping It 100, everything honestly changed. And I thank you all individually, but I'll thank you publicly, too. I mean, I really appreciate the nod. Of all the stuff you guys could be putting out there, you never had to put any of my stuff out there. And I sincerely appreciate it, because it really did change the course of my career. Seriously.
Well, we put it out because, A, it was great. And number two, because the next time we are in Vegas, that place that you took me to with the Wagyu burgers and the shakes is on you.
Fair enough. No, we'll call it even. I don't fucking know anybody here to answer that.
So, okay. So we have a third mystery guest, and this just locked in, and I have a feeling it's going to be everybody's favorite. So here we go.
Oh my God.
Ted Irvin speaking.
Is this Keeping It 100 Hall of Famer Ted Irvine?
Mr. Irvin, to you, sir.
Oh, I'm sorry, Mr.
Yes, it is. Yes. What's going on?
How are you? Welcome to the show.
Yeah, I'm on there already?
Yeah, we are here.
What's up?
You're on.
What's up?
What's up? Hey, who's that, Corin?
Yeah, how you doing?
How you doing, man? I haven't talked to you for a long time.
Yeah, there's a twerp and a punk that wants to talk to you, too.
Yeah, I got an issue here. This is Disco. You made some comments about me on the cruise. You cut a promo at the one when they were doing one of the live podcasting, and you called me a twerp and a punk and a wimp.
A wimp, yeah.
And I think it would be a good idea to bring you on here and apologize to me for calling me those vicious names and for trying to discredit my good name.
Why would I apologize? You didn't have the guts to show up. You were going to beat the heck out of me on that ship. You were going to beat up an old guy, or an old guy was going to beat up you.
Right.
If you want to talk about anything, show up to these events. Why are you talking to the radio all the time?
There you go. There you go, Mr. Urban. He's very mad, too. He was very mad that St. Louis honored you or had your name on a float or something, the St. Louis Blues.
Float?
Yeah.
You mean the Zamboni? Well, they should, because I played there, and they called me Mr. Urban. Not like Disco. He calls me bad names. So,
Let me ask you a question. Wait a second. This was kind of – because you can't ignore – All right, that this seemed like you jumping on the bandwagon, you and your son, okay, when he was posting, I think he even waited to post until game, like, they could clinch, posted that you had played for the St. Louis Blues. How come you guys weren't there from the get-go, from the start of the playoffs? Did you just not think they had a chance to win it?
No, because I also played for Boston, and I would have jumped on the bandwagon for Boston. We're not stupid up in Canada. We wait to the end. And we hedged our bet, so we waited to the very end. I could have gone either way, man.
Oh, my God. What did you think of the NHL playoffs this past year?
You know, I know you guys love your hockey. I tell you the truth, I love the storyline, guys. The St. Louis, I thought that young kid in goal, I've learned
he
some more
incredible.
About him. He wasn't even supposed to be brought up. When the St. Louis number one guy got hurt, they phoned down to the minor leaguers, and they said, send the goaltender up. It wasn't supposed to be Bennington. It was the other goalie, and he had sprained his ankle, and they had to send Bennington up. And the kid, you know, he's like Ken Dryden 1,000 years ago, stood everybody on the ear. I love that story. Craig Berube, big, tough guy. You know, what's he doing in January, the head coach, and now he's a Stanley Cup winner. And the thing about Berube, he didn't put up with any guff on the bench. He benched some of their star players, which just players say, you can't bench me. And he did. I just loved a lot of the stories. But can I tell you a quick story? St. Louis had a lot of history there from the 1970 with Bobby Orr and Noel Picard. So they had a lot of old St. Louis players on there talking about the old days. And they had a guy on there named Bobby Plager.
Yes.
Bobby Plager, tough guys, him and his brother. Bobby Plager played defense with a guy named Al Arbor. If you remember Disco, Al Arbor is the first guy that wore glasses.
Right.
Bobby Plager says, Al Arbor gets in the fight with this kid from Los Angeles named Ted Irvin. Irvin knocks his glasses off. And they said, Bobby, what did you do? He said, I stood behind Al Arbor and said, to your left, to your right, to your right, to your left. So he's calling the fight. I'd never heard that story before. So
That's great. You know, the old St. Louis was in last place. And they just made hold. That's unbelievable to me. Like, I think when come January, they were in last place, right?
Yes.
They were. Yeah, they changed everything. They fired the coach. They hired Berube. That really is a fascinating story if you think about it. You get a guy, Berube's basically kind of known as just kind of like a goon his whole career and stuff and all that. But for some reason, maybe just a team like that needs that type of edge to them. You know, a coach that's tough. If you got a bunch of players that are kind of like skilled like that, it kind of rubs off on them, doesn't it?
Well, it rubs off on him, but what he did was he gave everybody a role on that team. Because most teams are run by one or two or three or four guys, but every line had a role to play, and they all respected each other. Take that Maroon. He asked for $6 million in Edmonton the year before, and they said, take a hike. And he goes back to St. Louis for $1.5 million. When he played against the Winnipeg Jets, he just ran them out of the building. He all of a sudden had a role at that time of the year. And that's all the guys wanted him to do. And I really respected that the team kept playing the guys and everybody had a role to play. And it's not the big guns all the time. It's a team effort. And they were the epitome of, to me, that everybody pulled together. And you're right there. I just thought it was a great story from everybody being part of that win.
Speaking of like everybody having roles and like a team being good, like you look at a locker room. Do you have any stories about like when you were playing on a team and it was bad and like, what's the worst you've ever seen, like when you were playing, like in a locker room that just like, where the guys just didn't like each other?
Well, you would never talk about it, but you tried to play together as a team when you're on the ice. But in practices, you would set a guy up. You would, your center would say, put the puck in my feet, and you'd put the puck in the centerman's feet, and the guy you didn't like would come and check the centerman, and the centerman would cross-check him, set him up type thing, eh? But when you win the game, you backed each other. But I was pretty lucky in L.A. and then, New York, especially St. Louis. You challenge each other, but normally it was in practice that you would, hit somebody. Because especially the old 60s, you went into Boston, you need everybody backing you up because they would run you out of Philadelphia. They'd run you out of the building. So even if you didn't like the guy in your team, you needed him beside you, and he needed you beside you. So you kind of support each other, eh?
Plus, too, is it kind of like when you go into, say you're going into your team's going into Philly, right? And they've lost three in a row. And like, you know, and like you're going to, like, does everybody kind of know, hey guys, be ready tonight. We're probably going to have to fight, you know, because they're slumping. They're probably mad. You know what I'm saying? Would you get that feeling a lot? Like when you go and play teams, like everybody's kind of like aware that like, hey guys, we might have to fight out there tonight. Everybody watch each other's backs. Is that what it's like?
Well, Philadelphia especially, you knew before you went in there. I mean, in the old days, they didn't have overhangs when you came out of the dressing room, so the fans poured beer and popcorn on top of your head. And you went on the ice. I mean, Schultz and DuPont and Zaleski, these guys were waiting at center ice to yap at you. They used to have the referees right at the end of the rink in warm-ups because you knew. And we used to have a thing called road flu. We had guys in our team. You knew that morning this is not a good sign when one of your top defensemen is drinking coffee and his hands are shaking. He knows something's going to happen. Eh? So you try to stick together. But with Broadway, with Philly, everybody would fight you. So, you know, they would pick you off kind of thing. So you knew that, definitely. Boston was the same way. Again, in the old days, everybody got 10 feet higher when they played at home. There were guys that played in the road, you never saw them. When they got home, they'd run you out of the building. So you had to rely on your teammates to be there with you and jump in quick. The worst two things I always told you in hockey is when you got in a fight and all you heard the referee say, let him go, because then you're in trouble because right. Nobody's jumping in to help you. So
you used to play in the Omni, right, Atlanta?
Yep.
Did you ever have the fan that when you'd come out and the fan would have the rubber chicken dangling in front of you? Did you remember that with the fan? In Atlanta, we always had a guy there that was, you know, you said like where the fans could pour beer on you. When you come out, there was a fan. We used to have season tickets. There was a fan that would always dangle a rubber chicken in front of the opposing team when they come out of the thing. Do you remember that at all from playing Atlanta?
For years, Mr. I thought it was you. I asked Chris.
It was his dad.
Oh, yeah. When we went into Atlanta, the FBI used to have pregame talks with us, say, and they just told us, shut your mouth down there. They don't like Northerners. Don't go to the bars. Here's the bars. Don't go because you're going to get beat up. So it wasn't a great place for us to go into because the FBI was telling before the game.
Really?
Watch out for these. Oh, yeah. Are you kidding me? We were told what bars to go to, what bars not to go to.
And because that's down the South, and it's like the early 70s. It's kind of like, you know, kind of like a little, you know, they're kind of racist. They don't like foreigners, kind of. It's kind of like that.
Well, they told us that.
Yeah, really?
They told us. We had one game where the guys went to the bar, and, the team was on the road. The guys who were hurt went to a bar. We got a phone call on the road that the FBI had spotted some of our teammates in the bar, and our owner and coach had to go back to the FBI and say, hold it. Why were these guys in the bar? Were you gambling? Were you this or that? Boy, it was those days, especially Atlanta, they just told us, stay out of there, boys. They don't mess around with you guys. So we went back to the room and had Coke.
Jesus.
So let me ask you a question. Who was like one of the best teams they ever played against? Was it the Broad Street Bullies? Was it these great Montreal Canadiens teams, you know, being defended when Ken Dryden was there? Or Bernie Parent, the Magician, or the Boston Bruins teams with the Espositos and the Oars? And what was the best team that you ever went up against?
Well, like Philadelphia wasn't the best team. They were the toughest team. They were going to, Freddie Shearer, the coach, said, we're going to beat them in the alley. And you knew they were going to beat you up. They were good hockey players, like Bernie Parent. Was an old teammate of mine, one of the best goaltenders, and he had the best sign ever, only Jesus saves more than Bernie.
Right.
So, but they were good hockey players.
And what a great nickname, right? The Magician.
Yeah. Right. Yes. But then, see, to me, Boston, we lost the Stanley Cup to them. Right. And Bobby Orr, to me, was the greatest hockey player. And that was the best team ever because he just changed the whole dynamics of the game. You had Esposito and you had Cashman and you had lots of other guys. And you had Cheesy and Jerry Cheevers in goal.
Yep.
But Bobby Orr, you just knew that there was one guy, he's going to beat you if he can, because we were told to hit him. And we'd throw Peter Stemkowski as my center, and we'd throw the puck in his corner, and we'd go in and we'd run Bobby Orr. We did our job. We turned around. He'd be leading the puck up the ice. We said, what the hell? We just hit him. Now he's leading. He's going the other way. We can't catch him.
Was he a trash talker? Would he talk trash to you, or was he very quiet?
No. Bobby Orr is a first class man, first class. And you'll see, you've got a highlight. I fight him in Boston headlines and paper next year. Irvin should be thrown out of hockey and everything else. Bobby Orr. But then you had Montreal. Now, Montreal had the history, eh? And when you played in Montreal, the ice was like glass. So when you went in there, you had all these famous names, the Beliveaux and the Richards. Yeah. That was the fastest hockey I've ever played in my life.
It's like you're playing in a church, like the church of hockey, like, you know, like Montreal, yeah. Right?
Yeah. Can I ask you a question, Ted? I never saw Maurice Rocket Richard. Did you?
Yes.
How great was he?
He was great, but I'll tell you what I remember about him, his eyes.
Yeah.
He had eyes on him. He's like Mark Messier. Mark Messier, there's only a couple guys I remember on the ice when you're at that level. Their eyes were fire and red, and they were just, they eat right through you type of thing. So I remember that. And he was tough. He was one of the miserable. He was a trash talker, stick band, goal scorer, fiery. I mean, they had a riot over him in Montreal. You know?
Yeah.
Who was for teammates you've had, who was the best teammate that you had that was like a great guy to play with, and who was the best player teammate that you had that was kind of like a just not a good guy, like the worst,
like
guy to
Disco.
You said it. I'm trying to be friends with the man.
I'm just keeping it real, Mr. Irvine.
Yeah, okay. Keep it real. That's the show.
Yep.
But you see, like if I went, I was just in New York last year. Jean Rattel was our center in New York. He was our Jean Bello, the classiest man on and off the ice, faith man, everything else. To me, he was the epitome of what a hockey player should be like. You know, there's great hockey players, but there was guys on and off the ice to me that meant a lot. I mean, Rod Gilbert was great on the ice, Vic Hadfield great on the ice, but the combination of on and off the ice was a guy like Jean Rattel. Bobby Orr, I started junior, you know, when I first started, he was one of those guys. Jerry Cheevers for Boston Bruins, he was a winner and a good guy. You know, he was a good guy for that kind of stuff.
Bro, I grew up with that team, so I know everybody that you're talking about.
Who are some of the guys like bad guys? Like what did the league, what did the other teams think about a highly skilled player, a guy like Bobby Clark, who was a dirty player too? And it was kind of like, you know, he had that, you know, well, what did people think? Like, what was your opinion of guys like that? Did you hate him or did you respect him?
Is your show rated right now?
Never.
Never.
Okay. Right. Bobby Clark was the most miserable bastard I ever played against in my whole life. He was cheap. He'd hack you. And if you tried to get close to him, Schultz and Zaleski would just step in and beat the hell out of you. And Bobby knew that. He was the worst stick man. He broke the Russian's ankle. But I'll tell you what, I wish I'd play with him because he was a winner. He wouldn't let that team lose.
So, bro, I love those teams, the Broad Street Bullies. I love those teams.
You
skate on the ice with them. You see them.
But, you know, as a fan, I just love their style, you know.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, they played as a team, and they had some good hockey players, don't get me wrong. So
1,000%.
That type of guy was like that. John Ferguson in Montreal, toughest guy, you know, because he hit you so fast. He was like Dave Schultz. He dropped his gloves before he even knew it. Right. And so he was good. He wasn't mean, but he would just, 10 years after he quit hockey, still wouldn't talk to me. He was in Winnipeg. He was a general manager. I was doing radio. He still wouldn't talk to me because he hated you from the old days. That was John Ferguson, eh? And he was tough. He was a good fighter, stuff like that.
Sounds like old school wrestlers when they have heat. They don't talk to each other for 10 years either. Fuck that guy.
Yeah. Right.
It's been 20 years. Fuck that guy.
Right.
Hell of a deal.